Welcome to the Nobody Told Me That podcast. My name is Teresa Duncan, and my goal is to share information that you probably weren't thinking about. I love preparing my friends for situations that may come completely out of the blue. I also want to share with you many of the tidbits I picked up over the years. If you absolutely have to tune out before the end of the show, make sure to check out the show notes for more details on today's topics and information about my online class, Dental Insurance Design and Management. And thank you so much for making me a part of your day.
I'd like to give a shout out to my friends at Synergy Dental Partners for sponsoring our podcast. They know how important the admin team is to our industry. Synergy is a group purchasing organization, or GPO. GPOs reduce your overhead with lower supply costs. They also have partnerships with labs and various service providers. You owe it to your revenue cycle to check them out. They're giving Nobody Told Me That listeners a 2-month free trial and a $200 Darby credit for new Darby customers. For more information, check out the link in the show notes or go to odysseymgmt.com/synergy. And we are back with another edition of Nobody Told Me That. And I have one of my OG friends. I'm talking goes way back. Like, honestly, one of my earliest friends in the industry, too. I have Dr. Tony Stefanu with me. Hey, Tony, how are you?
Hey, Teresa. It's good to be here.
From long days of, let me see, long ago days of Career Fusion, which was an event, an all hygiene event that I attended, and people looking at me like, what are you doing here? You're not a hygienist. And I looked at Tony like, what are you doing here? You're a dentist. And so we kind of bonded there. So for those of you who are not familiar with Tony, he has been in the industry for a long time, has seen it from all sides, practicing dentist, still has his license, and is also a broker, an official broker, and we'll let you talk a little bit about that in a minute. But he has helped sales teams and corporations all throughout dentistry. He's trained their sales teams. He's helped them get through, you know, understand what's going on in the office and what's going on in the industry. He and I taught a course for a long time called Beyond the Operatory, and that was focused on what do you do outside of dentistry. But now Tony has built like this juggernaut of a brokerage firm called Connect the Dents, and he's quickly becoming one of my resources. He's always been, but one of my resources for all things DSO, because I really think nobody understands the market like he does. I could have said that for when I first met you, Tony. You've always understood what was going on in the industry, but now more so, nobody knows what the heck's going on with DSOs, especially if they're an independent practice. They don't know what that means to them. So tell them why you know all the things that you know. How about that? And then what does it mean to be an independent broker? And you went and got certified and everything. What does all that mean?
Well, you know, I just think it means, I mean, we tried to, when we formed the company Connect the Dents a number of years ago, you know, it was really focused a little bit more on just what the name is. And it's still that, and that we just connect people in the industry. And that's at the practice level to the group or corporate level to, you know, manufacturers, dealers, organizations, anybody that's involved in the dental industry. So we're a dental specific company. And as time went on, I mean, we started off just really helping companies determine their strategies for how they can actually get market share with their product or services, helping them structure their sales teams, decide what business models to use. A lot of companies, as you know, are based in Europe or in Asia, mm-hmm. and they're coming over here trying to figure out the US market. So it was really like a business development type of situation. And it kind of morphed into looking at the fact that it became apparent in probably mid-2010s that there was going to be a lot of consolidation in the industry, both at the company level and on the practice level. You know, if you take a look at it, for those of you that go to a lot of trade shows, and we certainly do, you can walk those aisles, and the majority, of course, of those booths are single booths, and they're small companies. Mm-hmm. There aren't many large companies in dentistry, but there are many companies. There are hundreds of manufacturers. And we started to look at it and say, well, do we really need 123 composite resins? Do we really need 400 implant companies?
I mean, yeah. So
we saw the writing on the wall. Plus, there's legacy companies that are just handed down generation to generation that are kind of mom and pops, and they've mm-hmm. hit a brick wall, because with technology, with it becoming harder and harder, and dealing with competition and dealing with harder and harder financially to be able to get additional market share and grow organically, we saw that for some companies, the way they were going to grow, was either through acquiring companies or on the opposite, some companies needed an exit strategy. And so we got involved and I got trained as a certified business intermediary because we saw the need there. And at the same time, kind of concurrently, we started to see the emergence and the evolution of the DSO group practice type of a situation. And we've been tracking that since its early days. In fact, one of my good friends who was married to his wife was my wife's college roommate. Turned out to be one of the innovators and pioneers in starting what at the time became the largest group practice in the industry. And so he had asked me for advice when he first started it, and then they kind of grew and grew. And then all these other companies started to get involved because dentistry was one of the last healthcare verticals that went through this situation. And it, with dentistry being so fragmented and kind of ripe with all these independent individual business owners that really had a tough time trying to administer and manage the business side of the industry, we started to see that the groups, the financial people, the people came over from medical, private equity firms, they looked at dentistry as a great opportunity. So the consolidation then started, of course, heavy into that. And practices, especially larger practices, were now being kind of wooed by the DSO. So we started to really study the DSO market, becoming a broker and becoming a CBI and a dentist really kind of allowed me a unique skill set. And so having also been in the industry now for 36 years, I think a lot of these companies and the groups kind of looked at us as an information source, but then also realized that we had the capability of getting deals done. And so that's what we started to do on both sides. So right now, Connected Dents is kind of split in half. We spend half our time doing mergers and acquisitions and also business development for startup companies or merger and acquisitions for companies that want to acquire one another. And then on the DSO and practice side, we provide practice appraisals as a standalone service to dental offices so that they know exactly, based on today's standards, what their practice is worth. And if they choose or want to consider maybe having a DSO affiliation, we then will assist them in matching them to the DSO that's a best fit for them clinically, geographically, philosophically, culturally, all those things. And so we do that and take a lot of responsibility and pride in doing that. So we feel we're a solid resource there. And we have kind of a unique business model with it. So we've been, it's just kind of snowballed, you know, in the last 10 years. And it's been a great ride.
It's been fun watching. I mean, I told you earlier, I feel like a proud mama bear, even though, you know, we're pretty much the same. So it feels weird to say that, but I am, like, every time I see Connect the Dents and your logo and you do a big reception every year at Chicago Midwinter, I was like, man, look at that Tony go. But one thing that I learned from you during Beyond the Operatory, because you have always said doing valuations and doing transitions is something that anybody can do if they have the acumen for it. And in fact, in Beyond the Operatory, almost like the dark horse was always transitions because people never knew about it. And then we started saying you can help a dentist talk about this and see if it works for their business model. And then people would get into it. And you started teaching a valuation course. And one of the things that I learned was there are multiple times in a dentist's career where a valuation is really good to have. And it's not only to find out whether or not they can make money, but also to protect themselves, like a divorce or, you know, in cases of a divorce or bringing on an associate. Can you kind of go through some of those scenarios and why getting good baseline valuations is very, like, it's so smart to do?
Yeah, I mean, we started to do some digging into all this and kind of surveying dental practices that we kind of knew and got to know over the years. And what we found was it was almost, I'd say 97-98% of practices will say they've never had an appraisal done and they're only going to have one done right before they're ready to sell.
Right.
And that's a real problem for a lot of reasons. We could talk about that all day. Mm-hmm. But having been armed with that, I started to think about it and I realized that one way for them to recognize the importance of knowing where you stand is that whole concept of, you know, everybody, especially if you're a practice owner, that's probably your biggest asset. And maybe your house is, but in most cases, it's going to be your practice.
Right.
And yet we somewhat know, or periodically even, we might get our house appraised. Or the example I use, which I know that you like, and it's a very simple one, and that is that, you know, we don't put money in our retirement account and just hope that when we're ready to withdraw, when we're whatever age, at 65 or whatever, we just look at it and say, oh, wow, I have that much in there. Like, right. You never do that. I mean, people track sometimes weekly mm-hmm. what their portfolio is or what it's at. Now, am I going to continue to contribute to this IRA or 401k, or am I going to maybe choose a different fund or whatever it might be? Because you want to see how it's performing, don't you? I mean, you don't want to be surprised or guess at that.
Yeah, I don't like surprises.
to me, it doesn't make sense if you're a business owner mm-hmm. and you're building, even if you're in early growth years, you know, it takes 10 to 12 years for a practice really from start, whether you acquire it or you build it from scratch, to really, then you go through kind of an early growth period, then you start to plateau a little bit.
Yeah.
That stage, it's important to know where you stand in case there is a reason why you may have to sell at some point. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know, your spouse could get relocated to another state. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see a lot of this now where you may have to just pack up and move at some point. You could have something that goes on medically, or you might sure. just get to the point where, hey, you know what? I put in enough time clinically. So for you to get then surprised and have an appraisal done at the last minute makes absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm. But there are other reasons for that. Again, yeah. I mean, if you're going to be going through a divorce, you have to know what your assets are. Somebody will say you have to have a valuation done. So you're kind of forced to do it then. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of people don't think about this, but a lot of them are still doing the handshake deal where they bring an associate in. And that associate is kind of told, well, let's see how we get along. And maybe in a few years, you can buy in or buy me out. And let's see how it works out. And everybody's kind of like, if this, or let's hope for that, or let's try to do this. And then all of a sudden, 5 years later, maybe you are getting along. And now the associate is like, let's talk about this. And you get an appraisal done. And the associate's like, okay, that's all. I didn't realize it would be that high, and I helped to build your practice.
Right.
So you're going to charge me that price in order for me to buy in. So then all of a sudden the relationship breaks down. Mm-hmm. So to me, there are a lot of reasons for you to have, and you know, they could be once a year, but if you're at a later stage in your career, like if you're, let's say, 3 to 5 years away from when you're thinking of clinical retirement, it really makes sense to know exactly where you stand now, maybe even quarterly or twice a year, mm-hmm. get an update on it, just like you would your stock portfolio. You look at it and you say, oh, I'm down 3% since the last quarter.
Yeah.
Well, you know, practice value can change dramatically in 3 to 6 months.
Of course. Yeah.
So I think that's the big thing. But having an associate come in, have the appraisal done right then and there so that mm-hmm. you know exactly what the practice is worth the day he or she starts in your practice. And this way you can then get appraised when the buy-in is looking to occur, and you can see where it's gone since they've come aboard. And you can definitely negotiate that in a much better way. And I think that's something that is often not even thought about. And to me, it's crazy. And the last thing is, I mean, many people hire practice management consultants. I mean, many of our good friends get hired by really good practices that are growing, and they're kind of helping them in all these different areas. But what if that practice management consultant and you decided, hey, let's invest into, and it's a very modest fee, go ahead and have the valuation done. And now we can see by the valuation where we currently stand with overall value. But there are certain areas that if you focused on will help to increase the value. And those should be your priority areas to work with your consultant.
Right.
And I think that's really what the key is in terms of knowing where you stand.
Yeah, because you're improving the whole overall value of the practice, whereas a consultant, you know, if they're not looking at that, they might just come in and look at one system. And by improving one system, they're like, well, then the overall value should increase. But that's not necessarily a straight line between the two. So it's a very interesting way of looking at why valuations are necessary. And when I remember hearing about, you know, what a big impact it could be on your bottom line, like, because you would know exactly what to focus on. And I went back and looked, and I don't think any of my current clients at that time had even thought about doing valuations. Like, that just wasn't something that they thought about. And then looking back, they've all had a divorce or brought on an associate or some life change that has happened. So hopefully this resonates with someone. But there is this specter out there of this DSO thing. So embraced by some, feared by many. My managers are all nervous because they've heard the horror stories of, you know, DSO coming in, everybody gets fired and kind of thrown out the door. I know that's not necessarily true. But one question I wanted to ask you is, there seems to be a slowdown of of DSO purchases. And tell me if I'm wrong. That's what it seems like to me. It just seems like it's slowed a little bit because they're being a little bit better with the money, like trying to see, and they're actually asking for better ROI now, like they're making it more accountable. So are we looking at, if I'm a solo office, should I be wanting to be bought? If I want to go down this way, should I go with a DSO that's a set corporation, a growing corporation, or do I go with somebody that's coming at me with private equity money? Because it's not necessarily the same thing, right? It could be two different businesses coming at me to purchase my practice. Or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a slowdown last year for sure. Obviously, we know what happened with the economy, and we know what happened with inflation and with interest rates. And that affected everybody and everything. So there was a little bit of a shift in the thinking with a lot of the DSOs that came in and were more proactive and aggressive in looking at getting X number of new affiliations come in. There were a lot of DSOs that were very good, strong DSOs, but made the decision that, hey, let's focus now on what we already have and really helping to build and grow those, what you would call same store, or you know what they already had in place, rather than acquiring more. I think, though, it's kind of a catch-22 as well, because while there was a little bit of slowdown in the acquisitions and we're kind of back to where we were a year and a half, 2 years ago right now, it didn't stop there. The sheer number of DSOs is still growing dramatically.
It's wild.
DSO is just really a terminology. It's semantics. It means dental support organization, but you could be anywhere in size from a few practices up to 1,500 of the heartlands of the world. Mm-hmm. But there are all shapes and sizes of DSOs as well. And I think that's something that you have to remember. There are over 2,500 DSOs right now. That's so crazy. A lot of people, like they do with anything, right? They'll just say something like, you know, we all hear in the dental world, you know, someone sitting in a chair saying, I hate dentists. Well, right. That means, does that mean you hate every dentist or you hate me personally? Or what are you talking about? So it's the same thing. You know, there's a love-hate thing with DSOs, but DSO is, you know, there's an expression out there. If you know one DSO, you know one DSO.
Yeah.
There are 2,500 of them. So it's important to understand that there are many types of DSOs, from the ones that are just, what you'd say, going out there and getting, you know, affiliations with GPs, to specialty DSOs, to alternate models. You know, we have mobile dentistry DSOs. We have DSOs that are really what they call dental partnerships organizations, mm-hmm. or DPOs. And so that's a little bit of a different model. I think what you have to recognize here is that what it really just means is, if you feel that you're 3 to 5 or 3 to 7 years away from clinically retiring and you have a large practice, there's a much greater chance at some point that your exit strategy is going to be with a group or a DSO than it is with another dentist. I mean, we work with practices that are, I mean, I have to be honest, I can't believe how many huge practices there still are out there. I mean, we did one the other day that's a single location that's doing $6.5-7 million.
That's great.
I mean, there are still practices out there doing 3, 4, 5, 6 million in a single location. Mm-hmm. What's the chances of another dentist getting $6 million from the bank to actually buy you?
Yeah.
You know, things have just changed. So I think what you have to recognize is you have to understand the differences in the DSOs and then decide and work with an advisor that can give you some insight as to what type of DSO is best for you, why, and then also look at it, because you could get the same price, so to speak, from two different DSOs, but the terms are completely different. And what we try to do is understand what the DSOs are. We get profiles on them. We understand what they offer. We understand their reputations, how they take care of you, basically, you know, what their way they, how do they operate? And they work in certain cycles and they work with different business models in terms of where they're going to go until they decide that they are going to recap and sell themselves. So to be honest with you, the quick answer to this is, when it comes down to it, if a practice gets appraised by us and then they just want to know who should they speak to and they're open to a DSO affiliation, there are many reasons why you should be. Mm-hmm. There are certainly, for some dentists, I'm very clear with them. You're not really a fit for them. They're not really a fit for you. And we're very clear about that with them. So we try to at least get that. But if they are eligible for a DSO and they just don't know where to go, it's important to choose the right DSO. And choosing the right DSO is about really what's important to you. How many years are you going to stay aboard? More importantly, is you're not getting 100% of your purchase price at close. There are terms and some of it is paid off in certain manners. Some dentists can really use more cash at close. Some of them are already doing well financially. And for them, the big thing with the DSO is they want to work with a company that is giving them stock in the DSO, so to speak. So they get a piece of that, which grows over the 3 to 5 years they're sticking around. Right. And then at the end, they end up recapping and your stock is worth, you're almost getting paid a second time for your practice. And for some of them, that piece is more important. Mm-hmm. So you have to really look at what the dentist wants and then decide who's going to be the best DSO, because everybody lumps them together. It's like everybody says dentists are bad or dentists are scary or whatever it is.
Right.
Not all DSOs are bad. Not all DSOs are good. There are a lot of models to choose from, a lot of shapes and sizes. And some of them, yes, are private equity backed. And the other thing to recognize is, you know, the ones that are private equity backed, they have a fund in place and they have the money there. So they really have to spend that money. That's why they're going out and acquiring practices, because they promise their investors that they're going to spend that money, build a group together. And then at some point, obviously, they're going to fine tune it, streamline the expenses, increase the collections.
Yeah.
And then as a unit, they sell. And that's what makes the stock portion the most exciting part of this for a lot of people. But what you don't know, you don't know. And I think it's important to work with people that understand that there are options out there. And what's good for you right next door to the next guy that has the same size practice may not be necessarily good for that person.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. I was hoping you'd kind of go in that direction to explain the differences and all, because there's so many iterations. Now, are there, I hate to pin you down like this, but I got to ask, are there a couple things that when you go to evaluate an office or really take a look if they're a fit, is there anything that you see that would automatically you'd say, you know what, you need to fix this before we can even talk? What are those red flags so that, because managers like myself, if, you know, I've been with my boss for so long, like I want to make sure his practice is ready to sell. And I'm thinking of some of the things that I would see would go, maybe Tony would like this, maybe it wouldn't. But I'm sure there's some stuff that like maybe paper charts or something like that. What do you see that makes them go, you're not ready for prime time?
Well, I don't think there's any question. I mean, if you're not digital and you don't have to have all the toys out there. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's a bonus in some ways. But, you know, we still see a lot of practices that they'll have great capital equipment and all that, like brand new, and they invest all this money now thinking that it's going to raise their value, all this money. And that's not a linear raise in, and I think that's one of the issues we find. But I think there are still some people that are way behind in technology. And mm-hmm. Certainly if you see that right up front, it's going to obviously greatly, because really it's a supply and demand thing. The reason that practice values have gone up and we're at a peak right now is because of the DSO market, because they mm-hmm. look at valuation the way it should be looked at. And most dentists still think, okay, even if I'm not fully digital or even if I'm not, you know, that strong in this and that, I have a high collection amount. That's true, but you can have a very high collection amount, have a huge overhead, and you're overpaying for so many aspects of what it takes to run the practice, or you're way behind in other aspects. And we can see that early on when they fill out the initial questionnaire or they give us their profit loss document. It's very important to recognize, though, that you can't just look. I mean, someone who's not trained in doing this can't just look at a tax return and look at your profit, because your profit's meant to be low because of the expenses that you're putting in that are both personal and one-time expenses, mm-hmm. things like depreciation and all that, which is not operations of a practice. So you can't look at that and say, oh, look at my profit, because things have to be adjusted. So we can look at something and say, okay, not digital, don't have too many active patients. Why is that?
Yeah.
We can see certain things like certain expenses that are really sky high, mm-hmm. that there's something going on there. They're either not paying attention or whatever it may be. And one of the things that's really interesting that I see all the time is I still can't believe the number of practices that haven't increased their fees in 10 years.
Oh, God, don't get me started. You know, that is one of my big pet peeves.
I mean, I don't get
every
it.
Every class I teach, I just go crazy
on that. These dentists are going out to get lunch every day, and they're buying a sandwich and soup that has cost $3 more than they did 6 months ago.
Right, right.
And their fees have stayed exactly the same in 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a part to me that I'm like, there's a lot of things that you can do now. Maybe right now is not the right time. Now, we'll evaluate it because I want you to see mm-hmm. it. I want mm-hmm. you to actually see it on paper. But you're probably better off working on some things for the next 6 to 12 months. And, you know, we can see that sometimes early on. But I think for a lot of them, all they think about is my collection number. And that's all.
Yeah. Well, and for so long, that's what all those sales were based on. You know, like, here's the production, here's
just
collection.
Just based on collections. That's it. Yeah.
So what about if you see a lot of turnover, is that a red flag? Or does staff not really make a difference because they might be doing turnover anyways?
Well,
right?
Generally speaking, up until 12 months ago, I would say, or, you know, even, I mean, obviously COVID is its own outlier here, but yeah. I mean, the last 12 months, it's hard to say. We see some really, really, really good practices that we've worked in helping to be affiliated with DSOs mm-hmm. that have gone through a tremendous amount of transition. And it's not necessarily their fault or anybody's fault, but, you know, the whole thing of maintaining people now and what it costs to get a hygienist aboard, what it costs to get a dentist to become an associate, all those things. So it's not as much of a red flag. I will say, though, that we do see a lot of larger practices that the owner is not actually doing a lot of production themselves. Mm-hmm. They own, but they're relying on the hygiene and they're relying on their associates. And if it's a case like that and they're looking to possibly affiliate, mm-hmm. then there's a problem there, because if you have two associates that leave and one hygienist that leaves within a few months, nobody is going to pay fair market value until they know that you're back to stability. Mm-hmm. And so there is a red flag. There have been times we've told people, look, you have a great practice. If you're able to continue it now that you've replaced the people that have just left, and you can show that at least for 6 months, then we're back in business with you. But otherwise, we're going to have to put a hold on this.
So let's look at the other side of the staffing. What if you have a team and the salaries are higher than usual because they've been there a long time? What does that mean for the deal?
Well, if it's a deal to a DSO, they want everybody there. I mean, they generally speaking. Now, having said that, it's still a positive to have people that are there a long time. So they really want to see how long has everybody been there. And yeah, there's going to be a few people overpaid.
Yeah.
You work a lot with office managers. But the question is, are they figureheads or are they actually what they're doing?
I mean,
we see a lot of situations, and you know how it works with family, where, you know, you go in, you see the family on the payroll, and they're not there at all. I mean, they're not even there. So that's a different story. But yeah, if they're a little overpaid, I don't think that's certainly not the end of the world, especially if the cash flow is still strong. Mm-hmm. So if the EBITDA or the cash flow, once you make the adjustments, is still strong enough, where the practice warrants a strong fair market value and the wages are a higher percentage than you normally would expect of collections, that still is a positive. And it's not like a DSO is going to come in and say, well, we're going to keep everybody. It's good that they've been there all these years and we're just going to pay them 75% of what they were getting paid and expect them to stay, because they know that's not happening.
Right,
so they're
going
to come aboard with, hey, your cash flow is still strong. You have loyalty here with your staff. And we want them to stay. And so we're going to pay them the same or maybe even give them an opportunity. Maybe they get better benefits in some ways or whatever it is. But they're not looking to get rid of those people unless the people are dead weight.
Right. Just a reminder to check out the companies who support the show. My friends at Synergy Dental Partners are offering 2 free months to try out their lower prices for labs, supplies, and select software services. To sign up, visit odysseymgmt.com/synergy, and the link is also in the show notes. Right. And that always shakes itself out, right? So they'll select themselves out of the
Absolutely.
Office. So I've had a couple like distress calls of, oh, my boss just dropped the hammer, we're getting sold. And so what's the compensation package? Like, look at you. Now you got benefits. You didn't have benefits before. Now you've got CE allowance. You've been wanting to go to ADOM for years. Now you've got a CE allowance. Like, what can you do now? So there is silver lining, but it's not for everyone, but give it a shot. You kind of owe it to yourself to do that before you just jump ship, you know?
Yeah. I've just heard horror stories. And I get that. And there are some circumstances where I think it's not necessarily the buyer or the DSO that's causing it. Look, we're creatures of habit. You know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this a lot. I mean, you and I both do certain things every day that we're not going to shake it. That's the way we do it.
Sure.
But, you know, if someone's there for 20 years and now they get, oh my gosh, we're being bought out, they immediately think, okay, it's no different than bringing in a practice management consultant. Very often the office manager and the assistants are freaking out because they think that, oh, they're gonna like show everything I'm doing wrong and they're going to try to get me fired. So the immediate thing is they're going to try to fire me, but it makes no sense. I mean, my first thing when I discuss this with people I'm working with these practices is, why would a private equity owned DSO that is looking to build a group and increase their growth and everybody make more money, why would they come in and make wholesale changes? Then they're technically paying a premium for your practice to what? Start it all over?
Right.
I mean, it makes no sense.
Yeah, they don't want that. Well, you know, you said family member. So I know, you know, I work with a lot of dental spouses, and what I find is they don't get paid a lot. Like, they actually don't seem to take a big salary, but that becomes a detriment, doesn't it? Like, when you go to sell, like, so what happens when all of a sudden they start taking a salary? Or do you advise that they should be getting paid, right? A competitive salary. Where do you see that? Have you seen that become an issue with the spouse not getting paid what they actually should be getting paid?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, in some ways it's funny. A lot of dentists don't take a strong salary either, but that's not going to affect them because they're not going to get a salary afterwards. They're going to get paid only on production. So the reality is that doesn't count there. But in your case here, yeah, it does count. I mean, if that person is the bona fide manager and is working full time but taking a small salary because they own the practice and they don't want to kill it,
right,
so to speak, or that's what their accountant told them they should do, and they want to stay aboard. See, and that's the big if. If they do want to stay aboard, yeah, I mean, you have to take a look at this. And that means sometimes that maybe that has to change from your end before you're looking to sell. And maybe consider the fact that, hey, I'm sticking around 3-5 years. My wife or whatever is sticking around. She is the office manager. We're underpaying her. I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's true of all the expenses. I mean, if you own the real estate, you're very often underpaying yourself.
For sure.
Sometimes you're overpaying yourself. But you see, when you evaluate, when we evaluate, we are going to address that right up front.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to actually, so to answer the question the best way you can answer it, if we're evaluating, we're going to look at, let's say, rent, and we're going to say, okay, you're going to become now an employee to the DSO, but you're also going to be their landlord. So that's a little weird.
Yeah.
So because they're not buying the real estate. So you have to tell me what will you charge them right now. So I put that right into the valuation. Okay. And the same thing with this. Your spouse is getting paid 30 grand a year and she should be getting paid 70 grand or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. If that's the case, I've got to add that in right now. Like, I've got to put it in so that we're showing that it's factored into the new cash flow. So if they look to analyze, they're going to say, oh, well, you have the wages increased by 40 grand. And I'm going to explain, I'm making a note on the valuation saying that's because Teresa is sticking around. She's being underpaid right now.
Yeah.
We factored that in. And look, even with factoring in the fact that she should be making more money and she wants to stay and she's the heart and soul of the practice, your cash flow is still strong and you should be basing your offer already now factored into what she should be making.
Along
so you handle that right up front.
And there's a lot of goodwill when you have the spouse sticking on. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, honestly, is when you have a dentist that is, you're not sure whether they're really burnt out yet or not. And they want the money of selling to a DSO, but they may only have a year or two left and they really aren't going to be that attractive for the DSO, but they say they're going to stick around 5 years. And then you look at it, their spouse works the front. Their daughter's the hygienist. So they've got 4 family members working there. And you know what? When the dentist bolts, they're all going to bolt.
Of course.
So that's a red flag.
That's a bad situation.
Yeah.
So where are the hot markets right now? I mean, Texas seems to be hot. Is Colorado heating up? I mean, where are you looking at?
Well, we don't really look at, I mean, we get appraisals from all over the country. We work with DSOs all over the place. I would say that Texas has always been a hotbed. There are tons of DSOs based there.
Yeah.
You don't have to be based there. I mean, there are DSOs that are based in Chicago that are certainly working in the Texas market, but Texas has a ton of DSO affiliations there. Certainly Florida, very, very big. Certain states like the Mid-Atlantic states, Virginia, and the Carolinas are interesting. There's a lot going on, but there are also state to state, there are certain states that are not DSO friendly. So certain states are somewhat avoided or a little more difficult to do business in.
Yeah, I always thought that North Carolina in particular was
it not. It is, but there are a lot of DSOs that figure out how to operate. They get a big platform there and then they're okay. Some states like Delaware are a nightmare because they don't allow dentists in. They only allow, like, getting credentialed in Delaware for staffing issues. Delaware is a nightmare, so there are issues with that. California, just because of everything about the way California is set up right now, a lot of the DSOs and a lot of the practices there are having trouble affiliating or selling even dentist to dentist. It's a tough state to do business in right now. The hot areas, you know, like the Tennessee, Nashville area, that's been hot. Colorado is certainly very attractive. We see a lot in the Midwestern states. Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Ohio. Those are great states. And New England area is very strong.
Yeah, I'm always surprised when when somebody says to me, like, the Midwest is heating up, but it makes sense. I mean, they got space to build. They got wide open spaces. I mean, it's hard to put up a shingle in New York City anymore. You can't do that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, there are tons of dentists in the Midwest, and the Midwestern states have always been very attractive. There are a lot of DSOs that operate in that area, and there are a lot of really good practices, just like in New England. New England's a little slower to really get built up in activity, but right now, if you look, you know, particularly Massachusetts and then heading east, a lot of companies are starting in Massachusetts. They're going through New England, kind of going through upstate New York and Pennsylvania and kind of going and then coming down and going mid-Atlantic. So we see a lot of that that's going on, and a lot in the Southeast that finally start heading north after they're established down there.
I mean, they're pretty much everywhere. And as an independent office, like, this is not, I mean, it's good to know what the landscape is, but this is your competition. I mean, it's not necessarily, you know, great DSO moving into the area, but Dr. Smith, who was there for years and has a huge base, now all of a sudden is part of great DSO, Acme DSO. And now you're like, wait, now the DSO is my competition? Wait a second. What happened? They just moved in. So it can change in a snap. So that's, and there's people, I mean, there's multiple people doing this. I mean, you're definitely my preference, of course. But there's also a misconception that there's, that pretty much like the DSOs, there's like, you're from a front office point of view, like, you're now going to be subject to all these systems and rules and reports and all that. And this is all not bad. Like, when they say this to me, I'm like, this is not a bad thing. This is actually what you should have been doing, even as an independent practice, because this makes you a stronger manager. Have you seen a lot of opportunity for managers, assistants, hygienists going up the group practice ladder? Have you seen that?
Well, yeah. And there's two things here. The first one is something we didn't directly address before, and that is, yeah, I mean, sometimes the staff gets nervous, like, oh, we just found out we're going to be bought by a DSO. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are going to be a couple of things that change. And the biggest change is going to be, you're going to be integrated. You're going to have to integrate into their software because they're all centralized. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it effective. It's what gets them better pricing, better deals, makes it more efficient, takes a lot of stuff off your back that you have to deal with that we've been bitching and moaning about as dentists or as office managers for years.
Yeah.
So they're handling all of that. And yes, you're going to have to go through a retraining of maybe a new system. Mm-hmm. Once that's established, so after 4 to 6 months or so, then you're going to be able to do a lot of what you really were there to do for the practice. So that's the first thing. And I think that's one thing you have to be really upfront and honest with them about. But again, you're going to be making as much or maybe more, have better benefits, a better package. Mm-hmm. So that part of it's good. But yeah, and then there's opportunity for many of them, especially if you're going to affiliate with a DSO that is now coming into your geography for the first time. So you have a DSO that maybe has been operating in, let's just say, North Carolina and Virginia, and now you're the first Maryland practice that is coming aboard with them. They just kind of using you as a platform to launch within that state. There's going to be a lot of opportunity for both the dentist there and maybe the office managers, the hygienists, to become more of a go-to person or more of a director on a regional level with some of these DSOs. There's definitely,
which comes with a bump in pay, usually. Well,
of course, right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's opportunity there. It doesn't mean it's always the case, but there's certainly, depending on, and that's another reason that you want to go back to trying to pick out what's the right DSO. One of it is, you know, really, are you just, you know, is this DSO, they've already got 30 affiliates in Virginia and I'm just an add-on? Or am I going to be really kind of a launch for them in an area where our expertise in running a practice and being a clinical provider is going to make a difference for their future affiliates there? And you're going to be used as a resource. Yeah. And I think that's one part of it. And the other part of it is, at what stage in their cycle are they? Because it's again a double-edged sword. Some dentists will say, well, I'm afraid the DSO is going to go under and I'm getting stuck in it. So maybe I should look at a really stable DSO that has a lot of affiliates, but then you become just a number.
Exactly.
And your stock is not really worth as much. Yeah, it's a little bit of risk, but it's not really worth as much. So we always tell people, look at your geography, look at the DSO, figure out like what's going to be your the reason that they want to affiliate with you. And is there other opportunity for me working in this practice in the future with this DSO? And then from the owner perspective, is the DSO, if they're private equity based and they should have capital obviously already, what stage in their cycle? We call it the cycle. It's usually a 5-year cycle. You want to get in on the early part of that cycle for sometime within the first maybe year or two, because you're going to have the most opportunity then to stick around another 3, 4, 5 years. They're going to recap at that point. You're going to be part of their early growth phase, and your back end money or your stock portion is going to technically be worth obviously more. Mm-hmm. So those are the things you really want to look at if you're thinking about affiliating with a DSO.
Okay. You used a term that I don't know if many, because if you're brand new, you won't know what recap means. So you're talking recapitalization. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the financial definition and there's the lay terms. Just like anything else, we talk about EBITDA, which is adjusted cash flow and all that. So, you know, these are things we didn't learn in school or anything like that. But I mean, really, the recap thing is just like, hey, they work on 5-year cycles. They are basically, let's say they're private equity backed right now, and some of them are dentist backed, and they're going to stay that way. And then at some point, you know, their whole thing is we'll get the 50 practices and then maybe a private equity will buy us. But they work generally on about a 5-year cycle, which means, you know, like you have, let's say, a private equity in place now, they're building to X over 5 years, and then they get technically bought by, let's say, another private equity firm. And when that happens, that's when when that transaction happens, that's when they're going through that, you know, we call the cycle and then the recap phase. And that's basically what it is. We want to keep it really simple. You know, the financial people listening to this are going to say, well, it's a lot more than that. And I agree with that, but that's not really the purpose of this call.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to make it too complicated, because definitely if somebody's brand new and working in an affiliated or in a solo practice and they've never dealt with a DSO, a lot of what we're talking about is going to feel like a lot of mumbo jumbo. So it's okay. And if you're feeling that, like you're like, I have no idea what they're talking about, it's okay. It's okay. Maybe you'll talk to somebody and then all of a sudden it'll go, oh yeah, that's what they were talking about. It's all right. This is all new to all of us at some point. So it's fine. But yeah, you know, if you're able to get a clinical director position at this level, I mean, when it happens and you move on to another, you don't have to necessarily stay in private practice. You can be a clinical director for another larger organization. I mean, there's lots of ladders going in that direction. Same thing with being a manager, you become a regional manager, then that opens up a lot of other doors that are not necessarily with the existing company right now. You maybe even be picked up by other DSOs that have seen what you've done in certain areas, or maybe you know certain markets if you're an RCM expert or a hygiene expert. So I'm excited for the team members, because I think there's a lot of room for growth, not just for the doctors. Let's face it, the doctors, if they're selling, they're looking towards the tail end, or they're just looking for an easier, you know, way of doing business. But for us team members, this is a good set of ladders for you to really take a look at.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just learning kind of about how they have systems in place and how you could take your knowledge now of helping to build the practice you were in, but then also then being part of a centralized system where you could see how they're able to streamline costs, how they'd be able to increase efficiency in a practice. Yeah, there could be. I mean, we've seen doctors that affiliated in their 40s and they went through a cycle or two and then they're done. They went through their period of, they then moved on. And I have friends of mine that are now like an advisor or chief dental officer of another DSO.
Yeah.
And the same thing with, like, let's say a hygienist. I mean, there's opportunity. A lot of the DSOs that are still in that emerging phase, the last executive position that they fill in the DSO management team very often is a director of hygiene. And they usually wait till they get to 30, 50, 70 practices before they do that. But think about it, if you're with a practice that comes in early and you're a hygienist and you're one of their expansion platforms and you're really high producing hygienist, maybe you've done some speaking and some writing in the industry, there could be opportunity for you to become a director of hygiene for them or in the future, someone else. So it's not really an age thing. I mean, in some ways, think about it, like you said, I mean, if you're young still and you're like, well, what about my future?
Yeah.
Well, think about it then. Well, what happens in a situation if you're the office manager and you're 38 years old and your dentist decides to sell to another dentist? There is more change that's going to occur there.
Yes.
You have a much better chance of getting cut and not having any future. Now you're not even learning anything new. You're just out on the streets.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's very true. I mean, a dentist-to-dentist sale doesn't come with opportunities for the team. It really doesn't. It's pretty. It's the most lateral move you can make.
And having said that, I am not entirely pro DSO. I mean, there are a lot of times when I'm telling them that this is not something you should do. Sometimes it has to do with the personality of the dentist or the type of practice or the location of the practice. But there are times when we don't recommend at all that they consider a DSO. And I also want to tell everybody listening that for the doomsdayers out there, there's not going to be the end of private practice, the end of independence. Right now, we're 25% of the country's affiliated. We're going to get to double that, maybe 50% in the next 3 to 5 years. And then we're going to have the independents and we're going to have the DSOs, and they're going to coexist. And there are plenty of reasons that not everybody will affiliate. And there's plenty of reasons why DSOs are not going to buy every practice in the country. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to happen. Dentistry is still going to stay a very interesting and unique part of the healthcare system.
For sure.
And because we can still practice any way we want as dental people. Yeah. And I think that's important to note to everybody, because everybody thinks that this is the end of private practice, and it's not.
It's not. And, you know, it's funny because there's this other perception out there that DSOs are like this all very well-run machine. And, you know, they're all just put together so well. And there's just all these business experts coming together. And I remember the first couple times I consulted with smaller groups that were getting ready to, or smaller practices that were getting ready to go into groups, really like less than 10, right? Everything's just a mess. It's a disaster. Like it's cobbled together. So yes, some are very well-run, but just like private practices, some are just a total hot mess. And so they're much existing because the wheels are just going like automatically, and they've got money pumping into them. So they're keeping it going. But, you know, you take out one key player and it's just a disaster.
Yeah, a lot of them are scaling on the fly. And I tell you the truth, I mean, that's part of what we do when we get profiles on them. We're not going to recommend a DSO that's at, let's say, 20. There are DSOs at 20 practices. Again, putting them side by side, just like two practices side by side, they might look similar superficially. Mm-hmm. But the reality is the management team that's in place, you know, I like the ones that are kind of slow and steady in terms of growing. Like, they're more concerned right now about getting the best management in place so that they're ready for that growth and the scaling rather than doing it on the fly. And we see so many circumstances of that, you know, and if we see anything like that in a DSO, we're not going to recommend that DSO to a practice, especially a practice that has trusted us enough to appraise the practice and has paid us to do that fair market value for them. We're not just going to say you just go with any DSO that's in your area or whoever bids the most, because all those other things are very important. And you're right. There are some that really grew too quickly, or there are some that just same transition as, you know, they lost key members, like practices are losing associates or hygienists right now. I mean, that's a red flag, right? So there's red flags in both directions.
So my favorite topic of insurance, how does that factor in to some of the conversations? And let me just maybe put a finer point on it than just saying, hey, how does insurance factor in? So if you've got an office that's very heavy participation and the fee schedules aren't very competitive, is that a red flag for a potential buyer?
You mean currently?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, say I'm ready to sell. I've been doing this a long time, older dentist, but I haven't negotiated my fees in 10 years. I'm still operating pretty heavy PPO. Well, what does that look like?
Well, the bottom line is it may not seem logical to think this way, but if that's the case and the practice is still has a good amount of collections and has good cash flow, that's exactly what the DSOs want.
That's interesting. See, and that doesn't sound, it's so counterintuitive, right? Because you would think having high fee schedules, but it's predictable. The hygiene is busy, like you said, and the patient base is not a ton of attrition. So you're saying that actually is a pretty attractive office.
Yeah, because that's one of the first things that they're going to be able to do to streamline. I mean, they're going to look at the supply and say, well, we can cut that 2% from where you are. That immediately increases, I mean, overnight, it increases the EBITDA and the value of the practice they just acquired. And they're going to renegotiate, you know, they're already leveraged. And now that they're a group, they're going to renegotiate with the insurance companies. And you're now going to have a much better schedule. And that immediately is a big thing. Plus, from a marketing perspective, they take over marketing. So they want to market as a group to more potential patients, and those are insurance patients. Yeah. As a matter of fact, ironically, we have a harder time bringing a fee-for-service practice, which you would think would be the opposite, but we have a harder time bringing fee-for-service to a DSL because they're like, well, we have to then market almost separately for this practice to get fee-for-service patients in. And they look at it like there's much less control. They don't control. And when I say control, I don't mean in a bad way. It's like they can't implement them into a system if it's a fee-for-service practice.
That's completely based
on the dentist.
So interesting. Now, are there DSOs where that, you know, DSO just being the general term, are there companies looking to acquire only fee-for-service practices, like maybe making that a niche of its own?
I have always hoped that that would be the case because we still have some really good fee-for-service. Now, we have had some fee-for-service practices that are good enough overall that the DSO is like, we want the practice. But yeah, it would be really nice. I mean, I've always felt that I don't know of any. There might be a couple out there, but I don't really know of any that are only focused on that. I mean, you know, you've got fee-for-service, you've got the insurance practices, and you got Medicaid, and most of them don't even look at Medicaid at all.
Yeah.
But some of the DSOs can tolerate a percentage. Mm-hmm. If it's, let's say, 2-10% Medicaid, they might consider it. Otherwise, some will say if it has 1%, we're not even looking at it.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, they want insurance. There's always going to be some fee-for-service. So the ideal thing for a DSO is like an 80-20 mix or an 85-15 mix. Something 80, along those lines.
80 insurance.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Correct.
And that is so, I think the current thinking right now is increasing the value of my practice is by getting out of network, is by, you know, increasing my fees. And so there's lots of, I mean, depending on.
Well, it certainly can be, as you know, because you know that certain, they are losing money with certain, certain schedules. So the bottom line is there's no question that.
Yeah.
So like I said, I mean, it really, you have to look at it from both sides. I think, you know, it's like you said, well, what if it's an older dentist that haven't renegotiated the fee schedule and haven't increased their fees in 10 years? Well, it's like the same thing with equipment, right? Does that mean if their equipment's old, they're not going to be attractive? Well, no, because if their equipment's old, but some equipment, I've seen equipment that's 20, 25 years old that is spotless and very functional and has been renovated and has, you know, has certainly fine. You don't just go and invest $150,000 to redo 5 operatories
right.
and think that's going to just blow my practice value out of proportion. It doesn't work like that either. So, yeah, I do think obviously they should be increasing their fees every so often.
Yeah.
No. But in some cases, there are certain plans that maybe they need to get rid of. But generally speaking, the groups want insurance-based practices. Yes.
It's so, I actually am so glad to hear you say that because you know how it is like when you hear it from your parents or your husband or wife, like it becomes like background noise. So I'll say this to Dennis. Yeah, you know. So then I say this to Dennis and they're going, so I'm so glad to have another expert say this, right? So that I can say, no, it's true. Tony said. So that's where I'm going to point him. I'm going to clip this part here.
I'm in trouble.
Have it ready to play. So you actually were talking to, and we're going to go ahead and wrap it up because you knew it was going to fly. You and I can be on the phone for hours. You were talking about you were thinking about educating people on the landscape of DSOs and you've got, so I know you got the valuation course that you offer occasionally, but tell people how they can find you, what courses they can take with you and how Connect the Dents can help them.
Yeah, I mean, we offer a number of programs that we've been doing for a while. The how to evaluate dental practices for some of the people listening to this might be a more apt for those of you that maybe are listening in and your vision or your game plan is to maybe acquire a few other, maybe become multi-location. So this way you understand if you want to, let's say, acquire another practice yourself, what does that look like in analyzing it? So that might be good for you from that perspective. And we do that course every 3-4 months. But we also do programs, sometimes webinars, sometimes workshops, where it's about understanding the DSO movement, just to understand what's going on out there, regardless of whether or not you're thinking of affiliating, because if you're thinking of staying independent and you're just going to keep building, knowing more about what they do and what they're trying to accomplish, because you don't know this, but your neighbor is affiliated. They didn't change the name of the practice. You don't even know they're part of a DSO, but you're competing against them now. So understanding the DSO landscape is something that we offer periodically, and also then explaining the differences between the DSOs and what they mean. We do that for practitioners, and we also do it for dental companies that are out there. If you're part of a dental company and you want to learn more about how do I get business with a DSOs? Everybody's trying to get in with the DSOs. They have 25% of the market, but they do, DSO affiliates do like almost half of the dentistry in the country.
Yeah.
So if you're a manufacturer, you have to understand, how do I get in with these guys? And everybody's trying to do the same thing, like calling them up on the phone and saying, hey, I can get you good pricing. That's enough, to not enough to get your foot in the door. So we do workshops around things like that. So some of them are education. Some of them are more about just how do you get business with them, or how do you consider a DSO? And so we'll do that on LinkedIn. We'll announce them. That's probably the easiest way. If you haven't followed us or followed me on LinkedIn or followed Connect the Dents and also me individually, we'll make announcements like that, that we're hosting a webinar or workshop on one of these. And we do every, you know, we do them a few times a year. So,
yeah. And Tony is someone that you should be connected to on LinkedIn. I would be shocked if you were more than one connection away from Tony, if you're not already connected. If you're connected with me, you're already a second connection if you're not already connected.
I hope I am with most of you that are listening. Yes. But if I'm not, please go ahead and do that. And I'll make sure that I accept your request.
Yeah. Just put Teresa sent me and then, you know, he'll be nice to you. No,
I'll take a few more seconds, but I'll still...
See what happens. See how we are. So I'm so grateful that you spent a lot of time on this, because I know a lot of dentists, they understand it, but many times managers and team members don't quite see what the landscape is. But I do know we have a lot of younger dentists listening to this. So hopefully, you know, they can see that there's something down the road, or maybe they buckle in and be that solo office that, I mean, I grew up in, you grew up in. So that's kind of my first love, but I definitely appreciate the perspective that group practices bring, because I'm all about education and they just shone a big light on the business side of dentistry. And I was really happy for that. So that's, I think that's only made us better as an industry.
One last thing about it. There is going to be a different model that comes into dentistry at some point, 5-10 years from now. You know, there's no such thing in today's age that one model then dominates for 20-30 years. We're not seeing that anymore, any aspect of our lives. So the one thing to know, if you're a young practitioner, you're working in an office that's growing, dentistry is at a great stage right now with technology and with everything that's going on out there, what AI is doing for the world and all that. There's going to be a lot of, obviously, that's going to be a big part of dentistry. So just look at it that you just have more options than you ever did before. So you just have to keep, stay educated. Like, don't make rash decisions, but don't also become obsolete, so to speak. And I think that's really all it comes down to.
Yeah, just the water is always running around us. We ought to make sure we keep up with it. So, all right, Tony, this was great. I appreciate it. Yeah, and I apologize again for missing your huge mixer in Chicago. For everybody who goes to Chicago Midwinter, he puts on this great big event. It's fantastic. Invite only, though, so, right?
And at the Greater New York, too. So.
Yeah, at Greater New York, too. But did you do one at Yankee? You didn't do one at Yankee this year, did you?
No.
Okay, that's too cool.
We used to, but we might go back to it. We'll see.
Yeah,
it's still one of my favorites. So,
yeah, well, that's your stomping grounds. So, went to dental school.
It's all good.
Where'd you go? Tufts.
Yeah, Tufts? There's only one. There's not really only one in Boston, but we won't talk about the H word or the other B word. So
here comes the emails. All right. Well, dear listeners, as always, I so appreciate that you spend your time with me. Look to the show notes for how to contact Tony, because he is truly, in addition to being one of my dear friends, one of the best resources in dentistry. See you next time.
We're all super busy, so thank you for making time for me today. The show notes will have any links that we referenced in the episode. You can also find links for my book, events, and my online insurance course, Dental Insurance Design and Management. I speak often around the country on management and insurance issues. Come hang out with me in one of my classes. I promise you'll laugh and learn.